Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Gittin Daf Nun Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 4 lines from the top of Daf Nun Hey at the Mishnah. In the Mishnah itself, you'll see markings. You'll notice the triangle shape, and on the side under the Mivneh structural note, we indicate this is a sidra, a series, a shel adios, Shel Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudgada. This is a series of testimonies, of teachings that he had received, and as far as what the connection between all of these different teachings is, you might find Rashi, Dibur HaMaschil, Pnei Takonas HaMizbeach, elucidating on that point. The series themselves represent disparate areas of halacha, though. The Gemara, the Mishnah. Heyed Reb Yochanan ben Gudgada al hachareshes shesia avia. This law concerns a girl, deaf-mute, that was married off by her father to a man. Shehi yoytza beget. Now, the father has the Torah right to marry off his daughter, as long as she is a minor. Her das, her acceptance, is not essential when you're dealing with a father marrying off his minor daughter. At that point, she becomes a full-fledged married woman. She is, however, a deaf-mute. That means she doesn't have a sufficient level of awareness of das that is associated with a regular bar das, a regular healthy person. The Mishnah tells us, shehi yoytza beget, that she can be divorced by her receiving a divorce document, even though she is a chareshes, and the point is that divorce can take place even without her knowledge. And that doesn't refer only to the case of a chareshes, but that refers to all cases of divorce. So the chiddush of the Mishnah is, and Rashi emphasizes this, that even though the kiddushin was a full-fledged kiddushin, the divorce nevertheless can take place because we don't need her awareness. The Mishnah continues, V'al Kitano Bas Yisrael, Sheniseis L'Kohen, Shechelis Betruma. Another point that Rabbi Yochanan tells us is a minor that entered marriage on a rabbinic level. There's a concept of Nisuin de Rabbanon, and here we're talking about a girl who is from a non-Kohen family, and she's marrying a Kohen, again, a rabbinic-level marriage. She is thereby entitled to eat the Truma tithe if it's Truma de Rabbanan, rabbinic Truma. What do we mean by rabbinic Truma? So we can use as an example all tithes that are not from Dagon Tirosh V'Yitzer, not from grains, oil, or wine. Oil, we speak about olive oil. All other tithes might very well be considered rabbinic. The wife of a Kohen in general, in a regular marriage, entitles her, even though she does not come from a Kohen family, the marriage to a Kohen entitles her to eat Truma. Here, we're saying that point, but only Truma de Rabbanan. Ve'im Mesa, if this Ketana dies, Baal Lo Yorsha, her husband, inherits her. Another teaching, V'al HaMorish HaGozel. Morish is a beam. A beam as in building material. that was stolen, Shebonoi Babira, and the thief used the beam and to construct a house, Bira, a structure, and the beam was like a main joist in holding the structure together. And of course, when it comes to the theft, the Torah expects you return the item you stole. The Pasuk says, Veheshiv es hagzeva shegozal, return that which you stole. Well, in this case, after the thief built a house and the whole house is being supported by this beam, if he's going to return the beam, the whole house is going to fall down. So there's a rabbinic ruling, Sheyitol es domov, mipnei takonas hashovim. The victim of the theft is to accept the cash value of the beam from the thief in the event that he is caught or he decides to do tshuva, he decides to repent, and we don't insist on the actual item that was stolen, i.e. the beam, to be returned. Why? Mipnei takonas hashovim means, let's take a look at Rashi. Mipnei takonas hashovim, she'im ato matzmichoi lekakea birosu la'achsir borosh atzmoi, if we were to require him to knock down his structure and return the beam itself, imonam la'asas tshuva, the thief will, that will serve as a deterrent to the thief to actually repent. So we want to encourage penitence, and we accomplish that by saying all you have to do is pay back the cash value and keep your house with the stolen beam holding it together. V'al, another edus of Rabbi Yochanan, V'al chatas hagzula sheloi noida lo rabim, a stolen sin offering. A man stole an animal and dedicated as a sin offering. Shehi mechaperes, he receives atonement through that sin offering. Mitnei tikun hamizbeach. That's an expression we'll see discussed more in the Gemara. Emphasis, though, is of course is that the theft of the animal was not known to the public. The Gemara. Before we continue with the Gemara, we glance at the side, the Nosei, the topic heading, Ein Tzorach Daito Shel Isha Begirushin. We don't require the woman's approval, her awareness or approval, acceptance, when it comes to her being divorced. I want to emphasize, as we've done many times in our Gemara marking Shurim, we are not speaking, we don't relate in our Shurim, in our Shurim of the Gemara markings, anything related to practical applied halacha. We're learning Gemara, and Gemara is the basis of applied halacha, but you don't read a Gemara and then practice the halacha thereon. In this case, we're talking about an area of law which is true, we'll say, on a d'oraisa level. When it comes to practical application of the laws of divorce, there you will find a difference. For the time being, we're dealing with the letter of the law according to the Torah. Omar Rava, Me'idusa Shrab Yochanan Gudgida, from the testimony of Rabbi Yochanan concerning the Chareshis marriage and subsequent divorce, we learn Omar Li'edim, a man who's married and is planning to divorce his wife, he says to witnesses, Re'u get ze shani noisin la, behold, notice this get that I am going to give to my wife. V'chozar v'omar la, and that husband then turns to the wife. Let's point out just another detail. Rashi adds, he says to the witnesses, not in her presence, look, you notice this is a get that I'm giving her. And then he turns to the woman herself and doesn't tell her that it's a get. Rather, he says, Kinsi shtar choiv ze, accept this document of debt. Shtar chov, a commercial piece of paper. And she accepts the paper, and what turns out, It turns out that it's a get. Harezu Mugureshes, she is divorced. When she received it, was she aware that it was a divorce? No. She was given to think that it's a commercial paper. And now the explanation. Why is she divorced? Or based on what do we say this? Mi lo omar Rabbi Yochanan gud gadol. Is it not so that Rabbi Yochanan said, lo bo'inon daito? We don't require her knowledge, her acceptance, the chareshes featured in the Mishnah, who had experienced a full-fledged marriage. She does not have das. She doesn't have a sufficient level of awareness that's required in many other areas, and yet she's divorced. Hochanami lo bo'ino daito. So too in our case, the case that Rova featured, we don't require her acceptance or her knowledge. The Gemara says, Pshita, this is an obvious outcome. Once you know Rabbi Yochanan ben Gudga's testimony, do you really need Rava to spell this out? It's obvious. Mahu detema. No, it's not so obvious. Without Rava specifying this, I would have thought, Kevon Diomar Kinsishtar Choivzeh, since he turns to the wife and sister, receive this commercial paper. Bitule batle. He, in effect, is canceling the get. Chomash Malon, Imiso de Batle, where what Rava tells us is if that were really his intention, Le'aidim Have Omarlu, he would have informed the witnesses. Vahai de Komar Hochi, that which he says to the woman, take this Shtar Choiv, and he's not telling her take this divorce document, Mishum Kisufa, because he's embarrassed. The Gemara continues with a quote from the Mishnah, the Alktano Bas Yisrael. The Mishnah said that was a minor that was married to a Kohen, Shenisis the Kohen, she eats Truma. Ve'ilu Chareshes Lo Ochlo. Before we continue further in the Gemara, let's glance at the side. We have a nosei, a topic heading. Tam Shechareshes Shenisis the Kohen Isun Derabonan Loyocheles Betruma, Afilu Truma Derabonan. Regarding Truma, the Mishnah chose to feature the issue of a minor marrying a Kohen, a girl that was a Ktana. The Mishnah did not continue with its example with which it opened, namely the Chareshes. So, we could have a situation of a Chareshes entering a marriage on a rabbinic level, and yet that's not taught as one who, if the Chareshes entered a rabbinic marriage, of course that's a case where her father isn't involved in marrying her off, but nevertheless she enters marriage, and we'll say an adult Chareshes, she nevertheless is not going to be eating truma. That's what we infer from the Mishnah. When you want to speak about a rabbinic marriage where there is truma consumption, so the Mishnah felt, well, you could see that in the case of a ktana, but not so with regard to a chareshes. And hence, we'll read the Gemara again, v'ilu chareshes lo ochla. If there was a chareshes marriage to a kohen, a rabbinic marriage, which would be the case when she becomes an adult and she accepts marriage or she goes through the marriage process with a Kohen, she's not going to eat from Truma. My Taima. Why not? You'll notice we have a marking, a double underline, which features the word Gzeira. Now, in order to develop the answer of the Gemara, we have to go through a couple of stages. So the Gemara says, in answer to the question of why not, Gezeira Shema Yachil Chereish B'Chareshes. If we allow a Chareshes, a deaf-mute woman who marries a normal Kohen, to eat, we're afraid, in the case of a marriage where both members of the couple, both the woman and the man, are deaf mutes, there will be truma consumption. In other words, if the chirish is the son of a kohen who marries a chirish chareshes marriage, there will also be truma eating, and we want to avoid that. The Gemara says, why would you want to avoid that? Velechol, let the chareshes married to the chirish who's a kohen, let her eat cotton oichel nevelesu. It's no different than if one sees a cotton, a minor who's eating unkosher food. If you see a minor eating unkosher food, there's no imperative to stop him. So the Gemara says, Gezeira Shema Yachil Chirish Bepikris. The problem with allowing a Chareshes married to a normal Kohen eating is we're afraid that if a normal woman marries a chireish, it's another example of a rabbinic marriage where the man is a Kohen, he's a chireish, he's a deaf mute. The power of acquisition that he has is basically non-existent. A chireish doesn't create a real marital bond, certainly on a Torah level. So we're saying that if the halacha would allow a normal kohen who married a chareshes to eat truma, then the chiresh who marries a pikhis, a deaf mute kohen who marries a normal woman, she'll end up eating truma. The Gemara asks, v'lecho b'truma d'rabbanan? Well, let her at least eat truma d'rabbanan. If the chiresh marries a pikhis, there's a rabbinic recognition of the marriage. Let her eat rabbinic truma. You can see this in Rashi on the third wide line under the Gemara text. V'lechol chiresh bepikris, deaf mute kohen married a normal woman. Let her eat betruma derabbanan, rabbinic truma, di osu nisuim derabbanan, umahani letruma derabbanan. A rabbinic recognized marriage, as this is, should be successful or effective in enabling her to eat truma derabbanan, those kind of ties that are rabbinic, the ties that are other than dogon tirashvitsa, other than from grains, wine, or olive oil. All the rest of the tithing, we can assume is rabbinic. Why not then? So the Gemara answers, Gzeira Shema Osi Lecho Betruma Doraisa. She might come to eat Torah level truma, and that would be strictly forbidden. We continue with a quote from the Mishnah, the Al Hamorish HaGozel Shebonoi. Tonu Rabbanan, Gozal Morish, Ubono Babiro. Man stole a beam and built it into his structure, Beishamayomrim, Mekakea Kola Biro Kula, Umachsir Morish Lubailov. Beishamay says we expect the thief to knock down his entire structure and thereby retrieve the beam and return it to its owner. Ubeishilol Omrim, Ein Lo Elodme Morish Bilvad. The victim of the theft has only to expect the cash value from the thief. Mishum takonas hashavim. So as to encourage people to repent, we tell the thieves, don't worry, you don't have to knock down your house, but all you have to do is return to the victim the cash value. And that will motivate people to repent. V'al chatos hagzula v'chulei. The Mishnah mentioned that a stolen animal that was not known to the public, it can afford atonement for the one who brings it. On the as far as the continuation of the Gemara is concerned, you see we have a new marking, a house shape, and on the side under the Nosei / Mivne heading, you see a house featured. Shtei Gishois, two approaches, Lahasbir Dina Mishnah, to explain the teaching of the Mishnah, the law in the Mishnah, Shel Chatos Gzula. Hezberim Shem Tolui, the Hezberim of Ula and Rabbi Yehuda that we'll see in the continuation of the Gemara, is dependent on Al Yeush Kedi Ikoni Ilo Koni. Yeush is a situation where the victim of theft gives up hope. He's Misyaish. Yeush Kedi, the word Kedi means Yeush alone. In other words, there aren't any other elements that are present. For example, transfer of stolen item to someone else's domain. That's called Shinui Rishus, or a structural change, physical change to the stolen item. That's the case of Shinui Maisa. Here we're talking about Yeush Kedi, Yeush alone. Does that acquire the fact that the owner gives up hope? Does the thief thereby acquire it? Is it said to be his? Of course, this has nothing to do with the thief being off the hook in offering restitution. The only difference is that if you say that Yeush Kedi is Kena, so then the thief becomes the owner of the item, and a cash payment would be sufficient. If you say that Yeush Kedi is not Kena, so you have to give back the very item that you stole. So our question is, Yeush Kedi, is it Kena or not Min HaTorah, on a Torah level? We'll see, according to Ula, it's not Kena. It doesn't acquire. One cannot acquire something through the owner giving up hope. And according to Rav Yehuda, it is Kena. Now we have to see how all of this is applied to our Mishnah. The Gemara, Omar Ula, Dvar Torah, means on a Torah level, Bein noida uvein loy noida. Whether the theft was known to the public or it's not known to the public, eino mechaperes. The stolen animal cannot be a source of atonement for the thief, even if the owner of the animal, the original owner, gave up hope. My taima. Why does the thief not become the owner, even if the original owner gave up hope? Yeush kedi. Lo koni. Yeush by itself is not a means of acquisition. So that as long as the thief is the one holding on to the item, he hasn't sold it or transferred to someone else's domain, the fact that the original owner gives up hope does not entitle the thief to be considered the owner. And we speak about the owner. Rashi says, "Lo koni leinyan hakrova," regarding the right to offer it as a sacrifice. Vafilu shamino. Rashi goes on to say, "Vafilu shamino shnisyashu abaylim." Even if we have heard the owner to have given up hope of getting his animal back, lo korinon be korbonoi. It's not referred to as his sacrifice. The chatos that one brings is required to be your animal. But if it's not, because Yeush Kedi Loi Kainet, so on a Torah level, we're telling you that no matter what the situation is regarding the original owner, you, the thief, will not achieve atonement. Well, we have to explain then the Mishnah. Umatam Omru, why in the Mishnah does it say Loi Noida Mechaperes? If the theft was unknown to the public, the offering of the thief, of the stolen animal, affords atonement. Answer, Shelo yu kohanim atzevim. Translated, that means that otherwise kohanim would be saddened, would be upset, would be apprehensive. What would their apprehension be based on? Well, maybe what I ate is a stolen animal, and on a total level, it's not a formal korban, it's going to be chulin, and I've eaten chulin shenishchatu bazora. And chulin, common animals, common meat that's slaughtered in the temple courtyard, is forbidden. So the rabbis move in and say, as long as it's not known to the public, this is an acceptable sin offering, and you don't have to worry about eating chulin bazara. It's a real sacrifice. We continue in the Gemara. Amri le Rabbanan le'ula. The rabbis said to Ula, Vo'anan mipnei tikun hamizbeach tanan. The Mishnah offered a reason for an unknown theft offers atonement, and the Mishnah used the term it made tikkun hamizbeach. What are you saying? You're saying something about we want to avoid the kohanim being saddened. Omar lahem. So Ula says what I said and what the Mishnah says are one and the same. Kevon de kohanim atzevim. Since the kohanim, we didn't say that the korban would be acceptable if we stayed on the Torah level, where yesh kedi lo kani, well, since the kohanim would then be apprehensive, they're going to actually hesitate offering sacrifices. Maybe it's not a formal sacrifice. Nimtza mizbeach batel. The result of the kohanim's reticence to serving and offering sacrifice will result in the mizbeach being inactive. It'll be batel, and that's the term that the Mishnah used, takonas hamizbeach. But that itself, takonas hamizbeach, is an outcome of the kohanim being atzevim. So once again, according to Ula, true on a Torah level, even if it's not known, it wouldn't be an effective sacrifice, but the rabbis declared that the animal that is stolen but not known is said to be owned by the thief, and hence it's korbano, and it's an acceptable sacrifice. And kohanim, as long as you have a situation where it's not the animal was not known to have been stolen, it's a 100% acceptable sacrifice. As far as our consideration, we're not encouraging theft by any means. We're not encouraging people to try to get away with it and keeping things quiet. We're talking post facto. Once an animal is offered and it wasn't known to be stolen, it's an acceptable sacrifice. We continue. Verav Yehuda Omar Devar Torah on a Torah level. Bein Noida Bein Lo Noida. If the original owner gave up hope, then whether it's unknown or even if it's a known stolen animal, the sacrifice will atone. My time off. How can that be? That an animal that is stolen yet is considered an acceptable sacrifice, acceptable once again by letter of the law. Why does it work? Answer: Yeush kedi kani. The owner having given up hope entitles the thief to become the legal owner of the animal on a Torah level. We continue on to the top of Amud Beis. Uma tam amru noda eino mechaberes. Why then are we taught that if it was a known theft, it doesn't afford atonement? It's not to be offered. Why not? So what? It's known. The thief is said to be the owner of it. The original owner gave up hope. The Gemara says, Shelo Yomru, we don't want the public to say, Mizbeach Oichel Gezelus. The altar eats, consumes stolen sacrifices. Bishlamo Le'ula. According to Ula, who mentioned the issue of the kohanim not wanting to eat from the sacrifice, Hainu dekotoni chatos. The Mishnah's example is quite specific, and I understand why it taught the case of a sin offering. A sin offering is a type of offering that is eaten by the kohanim. Ela l'Rav Yehuda, according to Rav Yehuda, who said that when it's known to have been a stolen animal, it's not to be offered, so that people don't say the Mizbech consumes stolen things. My Iriel Chatos, why does the Mishnah feature the Chatos offering? Afilu Oilonami, even a burnt offering. An Ola is a type of korban that's completely consumed on the fire. There's no Kayanim consumption of it. So that too would be the problem, the same problem, wouldn't it? If it's a, if we would allow a known stolen korban olah to be offered, people will say, "Yeah, look at the mizbeach consumes stolen sacrifices." Why then did the Mishnah feature the chatas as the example? Even an olah, the same problem would apply. The Gemara answers, you're 100% correct, and we have to reapproach the Mishnah in its citation of Chatas in the following way. This is a four-line, you could see we have a long answer marking, five lines. Lo Mibaya Komar. The Mishnah is in the Lo Mibaya structure. What does that mean? Lo Mibaya Oyla De Kolilhi. It goes without saying. It doesn't need to be taught the obvious that if it's an ola, which is kolum, means completely consumed, it's 100% mizbeach material, that a known stolen animal will not be acceptable. Elafilu chatas nami, even a stolen chatas, an animal that was stolen and declared as a korban chatas. As far as the mizbech is concerned, so you sprinkle the blood of it, and you offer the forbidden fats, the chelev, but it's a relatively speaking very small amount of the sacrifice actually goes to the mizbech in a korban chatas. The rest is eaten by the kohanim. Afilu hachi, even so, gozur, the rabbis ruled that if it's a known stolen animal, do not offer even a chatas. Shelo yomru mizbech ofel nechgezeros, so that people shouldn't say that the mizbech consumes gezeros. Even if the amount the mizbech is receiving is very minor relative to an ola, so this is a fear on our part that people would come to say the altar consumes stolen sacrifices. Therefore, we preempt that by saying any stolen animal that is, and the theft was known, the kohanim cannot offer it. It's unacceptable. We have a structural note on the side because we're now introducing triangles. Kushyos al shtei hagishos ulav Rabbi Yehuda. We're going to have questions on both opinions. And that's why we have the triangles in different directions, indicating that one triangle is a question on Rav Yehuda, and the second triangle represents a question on Ula's approach. The Mishnah, the Gemara, Tanan. Al Chatas Gzula, our Mishnah is being cited. Yochanan ben Gudgudah taught about he had received testimony, a teaching that a chatas agzula shalai noy del rabban, that's not known to the public, shehi mechaperes mitnei tikun hoil hamizbeach bishlam al the ula nicha, according to ula that said yeush kedi by say letter of the law is lo kainet. You don't acquire. So Nicha, the Mishnah's teaching is smooth. You have a stolen chatas. The owner has not given up yet. True, it's not known to the public. By letter of the law, Yeush Kedi, according to Ula, is not koine. Therefore, the ruling of the Mishnah that in the case that it's even if in the case that it's not known, so the rabbis moved in and said, allow it to atone for the sake of the mizbeach. They tikun mizbeach. We explained before that had to do with the kohanim would otherwise be reticent to eating, and the mizbeach would not be in operation. Ela l'Rav Yehuda, but according to Rav Yehuda, who said that Yeush Kedi is kina, that you do acquire, Ibcha miboyale. Then the lashon of the Mishnah, the teaching of the Mishnah should have been as follows. It should have been regarding a chatas gzula that was known does not atone. Meaning, even though Yeush Kedi is Koina, even though Yeush does acquire, the rabbinic ruling says that a Chatas Gezula that is known is not Mechaper. That would have been the Tikkun HaMizbeach, for the benefit of the Zerva, that people shouldn't say that it consumes stolen things. But the Mishnah doesn't teach it that way, namely Chatas Gezula Shenoda. The Mishnah teaches Chatas Gezula Shelonoda. Once again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if you want to feature something that's, we'll say, not letter of the law, but rather a tapkona for the benefit of the Mizbeach, then you should have taught the opposite case, namely Chatas Gezula Shenoda, that was known. That even though Yeush Kedi on a Torah level acquires, this will not atone. The Gemara says, Hachi Nami Ka'omar. The Mishnah is in fact telling us this point as follows. Loi Noida Mechaperes. The Mishnah said, if it's a Chatzik Zul, if it's not Noda, that affords atonement. Noda, if it's known to have been stolen, Eino Mechaperes, Metnei Tikkun HaMizbeach. So that the end of the Mishnah, which said "Mitnei Tikkun HaMizbeach," is actually an explanation of the inferred case. The Mishnah taught the lo noda example. You would infer from that noda, if it's known, that would not be mechaper. Why not? Because of Tikkun HaMizbeach, so that people shouldn't say the Mizbeach is eating stolen things. As you can see, we now have an inverted triangle. This is going to be a question, therefore, on Ula. Mosiv Rava. Note also that it's a long question. Ula said, Yeush Kedi Lo Koni. Let's continue in the source that Rava cites. Gonav Vehiktish. Ve'achar kach tavach u'mochar. This source deals with the laws of theft and subsequent slaughter or sale of an animal that was stolen. The Torah requires for a theft that one pays, the thief must pay twice its value. We call that kefel. If after the theft, the thief then slaughtered the animal, he has to pay an additional two times. That would be a total of four times the animal's original value. Sometimes it's an additional three times. That would mean a total of five times. We call that dalid vehe, four or five times the value. That is in a case where, following the theft, there is a slaughter or a sale of the animal. In the case that Rava cites, we have an added element. Thief stole the animal and then sanctified it. Vihiktish. Viachakach tovach umochar. And then he either slaughtered it or sold it. Mishalein tashlume kefil v'eino mishalein tashlume arba v'chamisha. The double payment must be made. He stole a common animal, and the law, as we said, requires the thief to pay twice its value. However, there's an exemption from the payment of Arba V'chamisha, the 4-5 payment, because when you're dealing with hektish, when you're dealing with compensating for something that was sanctified, there is no 4-5 payment. V'tonia law. And there's a source that adds to this that says, Bachutz, that means if the slaughtering of this animal took place outside the Beis HaMikdash, Ki Hai Gavna, in this fashion, b'chutz ki hai gavna, a slaughtering of the animal in this situation, that means a man had stolen animal, sanctified it, then slaughtered it outside the Beis HaMikdash, onush kores, he's punishable for that act, and we would call shchitas chutz, slaughtering outside the Beis HaMikdash, which carries with it a kores penalty. The e amris yeush kedi lo koni. If you're going to go like Ula, that yeush alone doesn't acquire, then by letter of the law, what has happened here? He has he stole and then sanctified something that doesn't really become sanctified. It's not his. It's not his korban. And if it's not his, the hakrava, the offering, the sacrificing of it, isn't considered an act of sacrifice. And therefore, what did you do? You didn't slaughter a sacrifice outside the Beis HaMikdash. Why then should there be a kores penalty? Kores my avidite. What's the nature of the kores punishment if you hold like Ula that Yeush Kedi is not Koine? The thief never acquired it. It never became a real a korban for offering purposes. And therefore there's no a sin of offering a sacrifice outside the Beis HaMikdash because he didn't offer that which would be a sacrifice. So this source would indicate that Yeush Kedi is Koine, and the thief became the owner of it. His sanctification of it as a sacrifice is a full-fledged sanctification to the extent that it would become considered a sacrifice. And offering sacrifices outside the Beis HaMikdash carries with it a kores penalty. So we have a question on Ula. Before we go further in the Gemara, let's go over some Rashi on this topic. Rashi that we're going to start with on the third narrow line from the top. Rashi says, "V'eino mishalein teshlumei arvav chamisha." There's no four or five payment in this case. "Dechi tavach u'mochar hektish avoy." When he reached the point that he was either slaughtering it or selling it, it had become hektish, became sanctified. We're going to emphasize now, and Rashi will emphasize this as he goes on, there's a difference between something being sanctified. You can sanctify a horse also. It becomes part of the Beis HaMikdash treasury fund. But when you say something is sanctified, that doesn't mean that it's achieved sacrificial status. It means it becomes owned by the Beis HaMikdash. So when the thief stole the animal and then sanctified it, it becomes sanctified to the extent that there is no 4-5 payment. As Rashi says, V'ein tashlumi kefet shumar b'chamisha noegim behegdish, kinafina b'azov. Here, we do have kefa because when it was stolen, it had not been sanctified yet. But the additional multiple payments are not relevant because it had already been sanctified. Rashi goes on, b'chutz yishochad b'chutz onush kores, if he slaughters this animal that he had stolen and then sanctified and dedicated to be a sacrifice, he would be chayev if he slaughters it outside the Beis HaMikdash chiyuv kores for shchitas chutz, for slaughtering a sacrifice outside the Beis HaMikdash. But if you're going to say like Ula that yeush kedi loikoni, Rashi goes on, kores maya vidite, why is there kores? As far as the exemption from the 4-5 payment, the additional multiples above the two, above the original kefel, there, that's not a problem. That's not a problem that we're exempting him. That which Ula says Yeush Kedi is not Kaina, that's the Inyan Hakrova Komar. It's not kone, it doesn't become the thief's to the extent that he could offer it as a sacrifice. Velolinyin hegdish komar, Ula, when he said yesh kedi lo kone, he didn't say that with regard to basic sanctification. As far as basic sanctification is concerned, that the thief would be able to do. Ela kores, however, regarding the kores punishment, imidoraisa lochazia lahakrova, if on a Torah level, because yesh kedi loikani, it doesn't become fit to be classified as a sacrifice. Well, only that which is fit to be brought in the Beis Hamikdash generates a chiyuv shchutei chutz. If one slaughters outside the Beis Hamikdash something that would have been acceptable in the Beis Hamikdash, then there's a chiyuv kores. However, if you say yeish kedi lo kani, then the thing that was slaughtered outside is something that was not classified as a korban. It's something that could not have been offered inside the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, why, when offering it outside the Beis HaMikdash, is there a chiyuv kores? We turn back to the Gemara. Omar Rav Shizvi kores midivrayim. This is rabbinic kores. Achichu aleich kores midivrayim, because there's such a thing as rabbinic kores. Kores is a punishment that is heavenly. Heaven ordains that someone doesn't live out his life. Heaven ordains that someone's children die in his lifetime. These are different possibilities of what kores is. What in the world does rabbinic say have to do with kores? It's not something the rabbis administer. So that's what drew derision. Achichu aleh is achichu means they laughed at, denigrated Rav Shizvi. Omar lohu Rava. Gavra Rav Omar Milsa lo sachuchu alo, a great man, Rav Shizvi, said something. Don't deride it. Don't laugh at it. And I'll explain what he meant. Kores. Kores meaning real kores. She'al yidei divrayim bosolo. That through rabbinic rulings, it came to a situation that real kores would apply. And what do we mean by that? What do we mean that through rabbinic involvement? Ukmur rabbanan birshusei, the rabbis have the power over ownership. When it comes to matters of ownership, the rabbis can decide who owns what. And that's called hefker bezen hefker. The rabbis thereby ruled in a case like this, where a person stole and sanctified the animal and dedicated it as a sacrifice, will consider it yours. Ki hechi de lechayev aleh. Through that, he then does become chayev, he becomes obligated, or he becomes guilty of kores. So when Rav Shizvi said kores midivrayim, it meant a real kores punishment, a heavenly kores punishment that comes as a result of the rabbi's intervention in declaring the animal owned by the thief, so much so that he has the power to make it into a korban. The result being that if he shechts it, if he slaughters it outside, he's guilty of shchutei chutz, which carries with it the kores punishment. The Rashi on this point, let's look at Rashi together. Ukmur Rabbanan, Birshus Ganov. Now the Rashi we're looking up is about a third of the way down from the top in the Rashi commentary. Ukmur Rabbanan Birshus Ganov. The rabbis said it's considered owned by the Ganov. Im Hikdisha, that if he should sanctify Shiochla Hekdish Gomur, that it becomes fully sanctified. And when we say Hegdish Gomor, it means to become considered a sacrifice as well. And if he slaughters it outside the Beis HaMikdash, he'll be guilty of the Avera, the sin of Shchutei Chutz, carrying with it a Kores punishment. Ki hechi dukmur shuselin kapora. Just like we have seen in our Mishnah, that a Chatos Shaloi Noy de la Rabim, if it wasn't known to the public, it's considered his, and with which he can achieve atonement. And all of this, of course, is we're working within the concept of ulos, that yeish kedi loy kana, but the Rabbanan can say that regarding this, you acquire it. Uknasi the gonsu vehefker bezen hefker hu vekotcha. This is a fine, meaning letter of the law would have said, Yeish Kedi Loikane, that it does not become the thief's at all, but because we want to deter people from doing these things, we say that it becomes yours, and so much so that if you sanctify a slaughter outside the Beis Hamikdash, you should carry with it a chiyuv koreis. We now turn back to the Gemara. Omar Rava. Rava, who up till now had, let's say, no problem in understanding Rav Shizvi, who came to explain Ula, things were running smoothly. However, he says, Ha vadai kami bayali. The following, though, is something that is of real concern or real doubt to me. I don't have an answer for this, says Rava, initially, that is. This is a problem. Later, you'll see Rava offers a response. But the following is a problem. Kiukmura bonan bishu say, when we say that the rabbis consider the stolen animal in the domain and under the ownership of the ganav, of the thief, mishas ginevo, mishas hegdesha, is it from the initial act of stealing that it's considered the thief's, or only from the point that he sanctified it? Lamai nafka mina, what practical difference does it have at what point it becomes the ganav's? Answer, legizaisel uvlodesel. The practical difference has to do with the shearings and the births from this stolen animal. If we consider it the thief's from the very outset, then the shearings and the births would be considered owned by the ganav. And when it comes to compensation, when he has to pay for that which was stolen, he'll pay not the value of, he'll not pay or return a mother animal and the offspring. He'll simply pay the value of a mother animal about to give birth, which is less than the mother separate and the mother as one thing and the vlad as a separate entity. Likewise, with regard to the shearings, if we say that it becomes the ganav's from the point of theft, so when he eventually shears the animal, the shearings belong to the thief, and the compensation is only as far as an animal that is to be shorn, but not the full value of shorn wool. If, however, you say that it becomes the thief's only from hektish, but if the animal had given birth to an offspring before the sanctification, so that's not the ganav. So in that case, the ganav has to return a mother animal and an offspring. This you can see in Rashi. We'll look at it together. L'gizisev l'rasel d'lifnei hegdish, the shearings and births before he sanctified it. We're talking about a time that's after the theft, but before he sanctified it. Iamris Mishaski Neva, Kaimushu say, if you say from the time of the theft, the very initial contact between the thief and the animal, it belongs to him, the thief. Gizosel Didehu, the shearings that the thief did, the shearing that he did. Entitles him to keep the wool. V'eino mishalim elo demei pora hoimedes leleid velo demei pora vloda. Likewise, with regard to the birth would have taken place in his under his ownership. So the thief would only have to pay for the value of a pora that's oimedes leleid. It's anticipated or it's about to give birth, but not the value of a pora and a born calf. So the question is, which way do we go? Do we say Mishas Gineva or Mishas Hektish? Mai? We continue in the Gemara, Hodor Marova, then Rava said, Mistabro Mishas Hekdesha. It's most likely that when we say it's considered owned by the ganav, it's from the time of Hekdish, but not from the initial theft. Shaloye Choyte Niskar, so that we don't entitle a sinner, namely the thief, to benefit. Because if you would say it belongs, to him, it's considered his from the time of the theft, so then he gets away with the lesser payment in the case that it gave birth after the theft. He would get away with the lesser payment of paying simply a para ha'imedes leleid, a para that is anticipated to give birth and not the value of a para and a born calf. So shaloi hechote nisgar, once again, so that the sinner doesn't end up benefiting. So we say it becomes his only from the Shas Hekdesh, and births and shearings that were prior to that must be restored in full to the victim of the theft. The Mishnah. Lo hoya sikrikoin b'Yehuda b'haruge muchoma. This Mishnah opens with a very, very vague teaching. A sikrikon is an individual. He's an idol worshiper that will murder. He'll murder in cold blood. And a Jew who wants to save himself from the threat of the sikrikon will offer the sikrikon. He'll offer him a piece of land and say, "Take this land and just don't kill me." And if the sikrikon agrees to that, so the Jew is very happy. He's very happy that he saved his life and is willing to part with his land. The Mishnah says there was no sikrikon in Yehuda. Yehuda is the southern region of Eretz Yisrael. Baruge Muhammad means during the wars associated with this destruction of the temple, what Rashi calls Milchemes Titus, the Roman Emperor Titus, that came and descended upon Jerusalem and Yehuda. We said that this part of the Mishnah does not make sense, but we read it and translated it. Meharuge al-Milchom of Elech, from beyond that time, from after Titus, Yesh bal Sikrikon. Then there was Sikrikon. Ketzad. What is an application of this law of Sikrikon? Lokach me Sikrikon, v'chazer v'lokach me balabayas. If someone bought a piece of land from the Sikrikon, you can imagine the land that the Sikrikon is selling you is land that he expropriated from someone in return for sparing the victim's life. So you bought land from a Sikrikon. V'chazer v'lokach me balabayas, and then you went and bought the land from the original owner. Mecho botel. The acquisition is void. The idea of the original owner cooperating and selling you the land after you had bought it from the Sikrikon is an indication only that the owner was fear-struck and he played along with the sale on the heels of the Sikrikon having sold it. If, however, you approach the original owner and you paid him money for the land, and then you bought it, that same land, from the Sikrikon. Mind you, when you're dealing with the balabayas, the land is not really in his possession as such. The Sikrikon had already taken over. However, if the initial deal is made with the balabayas and then you went and seconded it with the Sikrikon, mekho kayam. There's a Rashi, mekho botel. We say in the case where you first bought it from the Sikrikon and then the original owner, he also agreed to the deal. Damrina miyira avad. He must have done so out of mere fear. Inami, or he did so. Hasheni noachli. The original owner figured if the purchaser gets it, I can deal with him. Varishon the sikrikon koshe meno. He's too tough for me to deal with. But the main point is that the fact that the original owners agreed to the sale is not an indication of a real sale, but it was just an indication of the original owner trying to get it out of the Sikrikon's possession so that he could eventually repossess his land, dealing with the lokeach, the purchaser, was easier for him. We continue in the Mishnah. This part of the Mishnah deals with a man married, and he has a wife, and when he gets married, he becomes obligated in the ksuba. And as far as that financial obligation is concerned, we're going to describe a case where a man designated a piece of land for his wife's ksuba. So the Mishnah says, Lokach mino ish, some purchaser made a deal with that husband on that land. He bought it from the husband. And then he approached the woman to whom that land was designated and bought it from her. In other words, she seconded the motion. Mekho botel. That's not considered a deal. It's not a closed deal. But didn't the woman go along with it regarding the land earmarked for Ksuba? Nah, she didn't go along with it. Her seconding of the motion was only to make her husband feel good. We say nachas ruach hasis in the Bible. It wasn't out of real intention to sell the land. Take a look at Rashi. Lokach min oish, karka miuchedes l'ksuba zishto, a piece of land designated for her ksuba. O shekosu b'ksuba. So it was land that was written into the ksuba, into the marriage document. That's another example of what we're describing. If she wouldn't have seconded the sale, Omar Lo, the husband would have said to her, why aren't you agreeing with the sale? It must be a nayich nosat begirishin v'misa. Oh, you're looking forward to getting divorced or to my death. Hochimu b'vavasra. Anyway, we say that if the order of events is such that you buy that designated land from the husband and then from the wife, the wife's agreeing to the deal is not a function of a mindset of transaction, but rather just to make her husband feel good. Hence, mekho botel. The deal is off. Min ha'isha v'chazva lokach min ha'ish. If you switch the order of events, he first made a deal with the woman, and then her husband seconded the motion. He bought it then from the husband. Mekho kayam. That deal is meaningful. Zu Mishnah Rishona. The Resha that said Mekho Botel is the original Mishnah, the original teaching. Bezish Achrim Amru, a later court ruled, Halokech Mesikrikon Noisein Lebailim Revia. When a person buys something from the Sikrikon, he probably got it at a significant discount. The amount that the purchaser saved when he bought from the Sikrikon, no sein lebailim revia. You give a quarter of the value of the land you bought, you give a quarter of that to the original owner. So in contrast to the original approach, where you as a purchaser who bought from the Sikrikon and then bought from the Baal HaBayis basically accomplished nothing, Mekho Botel, as we said, the Baal HaBayis wasn't parting with his land, his whole behavior was simply out of fear. Here, the Bezin Shachram rules that when you buy from the Sikrikon and then all you have to do is offer the original owner a quarter of the price. Exactly how we calculate the quarter, that the Gemara will discuss, but after assuming that the Sikrikon was selling something he got for nothing, so he's probably selling it at a discount, the amount of the discrepancy or the differential between the difference between the actual value of land and that which you paid to the Sikrikon, so you offer that to the Bailim, and it becomes yours. Amosai, when do we say this? When do we accept this arrangement? That's Bizman She'ein Biyodon Likach. That's when the original owner doesn't have money to offer the Sikrikon. Avol Yesh Biyodon Likach Hein Koyd Milchodom. If the original owner who lost his land to the Sikrikon has money to buy it back from the Sikrikon, so the original owner has first choice, for his first grab, so to speak. Rebbe Hoshiv based in Venimnu. Rebbe then set up a court and they voted and ruled. Shim Shoasab of the Sikrikon Shnemos Ochidesh, if that stolen land remained in the possession of the Sikrikon for 12 months, then Kol HaKoidim Likach Zocha, then anyone who is the first one to buy from the Sikrikon, he keeps the land. Meaning even someone who's not the owner. Avol, no saying the Bailim Revia, but if you're the one to have successfully bought it from the Sikrikon, you nevertheless have to offer the original owner a Revia, a quarter of, just for argument's sake, quarter of the amount you paid to the Sikrikon, offer that to the original owner. That's basically the amount you saved by buying from the Sikrikon, so pay that Revia, that additional quarter, but you will keep the land. And now the Gemara deals with the... When we started the Mishnah, we said it was very hard to understand it as it is. By reading the Mishnah as it is, we got the feeling that that during the wars, the Titus Wars, the time of destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there was no Sikrikon, there were no murderers. Hashto... The Gemara asks, but now, Beharuge Hamilchoma Lo Hoyavas Sikrikon. During the war itself, you're saying there were no murderers, murderers who could be bought off with the land. Meharuge Milchom Vech Yesh Bas Sikrikon. And when peaceful times came about, when things got better, then there were these Sikrikon. That's highly improbable. If anything, during the war, during a time of havoc and chaos, then murderers thrive. So, what does the Mishnah mean? Omar Rav Yehuda Lo Donu Bo Din Sikrikon Komar. That means during the period of time of Haruge Milchoma, during the time of actual battle of destruction. So then the din sikrikon doesn't apply. And the Gemara will explain that in greater detail, but we take a look at the Rashi, lo donu din sikrikon. Beharuge ha-milchoma, during the time of war, dekoni legamri. The sikrikon is considered, during that time, if he got land from someone that he was threatening with death, and the original owner bought his life by giving the Sikrikon the piece of land, that Sikrikon becomes the full owner of it. Valokeach mimeno mekho kayom, and one who buys from the Sikrikon, it's a full-fledged deal. In other words, we would not say mekho botel. Because it's during the war, during the actual conflagration, during the time of destruction. Avol me'aruge mechom ve'elech. But after that, when peace reigned, then halokeach mimenu, one who buys from the Sikrikon, yesh lo din hamefurish b'mishnah sena. Then what the Mishnah taught is what would apply. So the opening of the Mishnah that said there was no Sikrikon Yehuda during the time of Milchoma, it means there wasn't the din of Sikrikon, which when we say the din of Sikrikon, that implies the possibility of one who buys from the Sikrikon that he has accomplished nothing. So that Lo Hoya Bodin Sikrikon means that what we just said, that he would have accomplished nothing, is simply not true, but the Sikrikon would be considered the real owner of the land. And if you bought from him, that's it, you're the owner. The Gemara now elaborates. The Omar Rav Asi Shalosh Gezeros Gozru. There were three, this is in stages in terms of historical development, there were three edicts, rulings that the Goyim, that the idol worshippers, that the Gentiles of that time had ruled. Initially, and we say initially, we're talking about at the time of destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Gezerto Kamaisa, the original Gzera was Kol Delo Kotil Liktalu, any Goy who doesn't kill a Jew, if you have an opportunity to kill a Jew and you don't do it, so then he should be killed. Now that therefore the average Goy, who the average Gentile who would approach a Jew with the threat of killing the Jew, that Goy was highly motivated to do so. He had to do so to save his own life. So in a case where a Goy under those circumstances could be bought off with the land, you can rest assured that the Jewish owner of the land was very happy to deflect this threat. And when and his offering of the land to the Goy was with full heart and soul. And hence, under those circumstances, you can rest assured that the Goy is going to be considered the real owner of the land. The Jew, having parted with his land, saved his life. Mitziosa, a middle ruling, stated, Kol dekotil, laisi arba zuzi. Any Goy who kills has to pay 4 zuz. He has to pay 4 zuz as a fine. So there's already a little deterrent, we'll say, regarding the Goy. Regarding the Goy as a killer. And then, Basraisa, the last ruling was called the Kotil Liktaluhu. Any Goy who kills a Jew will be himself subject to the death penalty. So that in a case like that, the Sikriko, or the, we'll say, the Goy is not, he's quite deterred from killing a Jew. Hilkoch, Kamaisa Umetziosa. Regarding the first ruling and the middle ruling, Kevon de Katli, since they will kill, even though in the middle Gzera it seems that if he kills he'll have to pay a fine, and nevertheless for the Goy it would be like buying a hunting license. We have to pay money, but you nevertheless have a chance to kill. There, the Goy certainly is not under the threat of a death penalty. So he has sufficient motivation to kill. Agav oinse gomer makni, through compelling circumstances that are presented to the victim, he will readily and happily part with his land. Gomer makni, he develops a full mindset for selling or for giving over the land, and it becomes the, we call the Sikrikons, the fellow threatening murder. Bas Raisa, with regard to the last Gezera, the last stage, where the Goy, the threatening Goy, doesn't have real motivation to kill. In other words, what do we mean by that? It means that he's himself a little worried. Amri, the owner of the land, figures, okay, so I have a Goy that's threatening to kill me. Let him take the land right now. Lemochor tovan tavana lebedina. Tomorrow, I'm going to go to court and get the land back from him. So in a case like that, the original owner has no mindset of parting with his land. He just wants to, say, buy time, get the immediate threat off his back, but he has legal recourse. Of course, that's facilitated by the fact that the Goy really would have been under a great threat himself had he killed the Jew. At this point, we're going to pause and not continue in the Gemara till the end of the daf, enabling the next shir, the daf Nun Vav shir, which features agodas concerning the Churban, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, to be presented as a separate unit, starting from over here. So just before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.